Good morning and welcome again to CrossLink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski, your host of the only podcast that talks about health from the eye teeth on down. And today is Sugar Show Day, and we're going to be talking about the different kinds of sugar and the different sugar news as reported by a couple of news outlets that have to do with health and kind of translate into oral health and back and forth. So that is what we're going to do today. I would like to invite you to contact me at Shirley@crosslinkradio.com to get your copy of the Nutrition Continuum that I've developed to kind of illustrate the way that we have food today in the United States and the difference between food and what we are traditionally calling food in the United States, a bite to eat, let's say, and how close that can be or is to toxic ingestions of chemistry and Frankenstein GMO stuff. And so that's kind of what I've developed to help people understand a little bit better about making food choices. So there you go. I'd like to invite you to do that by contacting me at Shirley@crosslinkradio.com. So I'm looking today again at some of my emails that I'm getting, or maybe not emails, newsletters from Natural Ingredients, Beverage Daily, and Food Navigator, and Food Navigator USA. And there's a couple of really interesting things in here that I thought I would like to share with you and bringing this information forward and making it shareable and understandable is a real hefty goal of mine. I really need for people to understand how all of this stuff goes together. And I'm hoping that people like to know how things go together and what they can do, small changes that they can do to help their health improve and their oral health improve, as well as the other side, what industry is doing to support the goals of healthy eaters. And in this day and age, you really have a choice to live like a hermit and grow all of your own foods, all your own vegetables, slaughter all of your own animals, which you can see could take your entire amount of time. There wouldn't be enough time to go to work under those circumstances. I remember communes back in the 1960s, and I imagined that they would all work together to support that goal. It's not very popular today. And although we have connectivity that is over and above what we've ever imagined ourselves to have with respect to being connected to one another, far-reaching, we have very few opportunities to really manage our intake of calories and nutrients. The industry for supplements is huge, and we can do better by supporting the companies who look to health and look to that aspect of health more than other companies. So that's one way of doing this, because it is extremely time consuming to find and source different foods and different ways of living. I was at a meeting yesterday. The Weston Price Foundation Madison chapter had a round table. It was very interesting to see how those people who subscribe to the Weston Price Foundation way of sustaining yourself are sustaining themselves. And it's very hard to understand how they can live that far off of what most people are doing. But they are. And by looking into those kinds of areas, I think it's going to make it easier for everybody to kind of balance everything with the kind of news that we're getting. Some of the comments and some of the discussions at this roundtable were over my line. I brought a friend of mine with me, and most of the conversations were over her line. And so that's where we're at right now. Everybody's got a little line, and crossing the line is easier for some than for others. So it's very interesting to see how all of this stuff kind of evolves and what business and companies are doing to support that way of life. The first article I'd like to talk about is from the publication Food Navigator at foodnavigator.com. And this article is titled, Three Changes Food Industry Must Make to Boost Health. And this was from a on-the-floor kind of an interview at a convention in the UK. And they singled out reduction of sugar, different ways of using salt, and to adopt the traffic light labeling scheme across all products, and all companies provide that three, red light, yellow light, green light approach to labeling so that it's easier for people to know what it is that they're getting. That's probably the biggest problem today, is that people don't know what they're getting. In this article, they make a special note about talking about how difficult it is to label for sugar because of the chemistry of food. And interestingly, they called out beer in particular, where maltose and glucose are in the beer originally, but it's converted to alcohol, which is not a sugar. So members of the Sugar Show and followers of this show know that alcohol breaks down into sugar pretty rapidly, actually. So it does go back the other way, and it can be extremely difficult to make those labeling claims, but some kind of claim can be made, and that is the biggest change that they would like to recommend for adoption. So a reduction in sugar, better labeling on salt and sodium, and this three light system, which can be really helpful for consumers. It's a little bit of a job, I guess, for the companies to, but they're already dissecting all of these foods into their minor components. So I can't imagine it would be that hard for them to stick a little, you know, area onto the packaging that has this stop and go light system. If it's a red light, okay, at least you know you're getting something that's not exactly good for you, and maybe that is your one treat for the day. You have one red food for the day. That's not horrible. People can still have their one thing. It reminds me a long time ago when these calorie labels and stuff started to really come about, and people were really, really complaining about how the labels were made so that a serving size, even in a like a bag of potato chips that one person would normally eat, they would break it down into serving size of three and then divide the calorie count by a third, right, into thirds, and then just post the calorie count where you know that people are going to eat the whole bag. It's a single serving bag. It's a tiny bag. And then I noticed at the movie theater that Reese's peanut butter cups that come in a 4 or 5 pack at a movie theater, they labeled the whole package as a serving and they gave a true calorie count of the container. That's the kind of transparency that I think is being called for in the companies who do food labeling and what kind of labeling they should be having. The next article is from foodmanufacturer.co.uk called Food Ingredients, and the name of the article is AB Sugar Aims to Save Consumers' Waistline by Busting Sugar Myths. And that is kind of what this show is about, is to educate people about sugar, where it is, what each individual sweetener is, so that you can make an educated decision about what sugars you're having. I had to, again, remind people at a paleo group that sugar is a natural drive. Sweetness is a natural innate drive, and avoiding all sugar and avoiding everything that's sweet is counterproductive, because you will fail, because you do need to have you have to find things that are sweet. I'm sorry, you just do. And there are a boatload of options to accommodate that. So that's pretty awesome. So this company called AB Sugar created a website called MakingSenseOfSugar.com, MakingSenseOfSugar.com. And it is really comprehensive, and it's very well laid out and allows the person to learn more about sugar and how it's used, and some sugar quizzes that kind of help really illustrate the way of sugar in the body and the way of sugar in industry. So I think that's a pretty nifty little website. I took a look around it today for a few minutes, and it's even got a little tab for dental health, yay, and how sugar works in dentistry, and of course it doesn't. That's one of the biggest driving forces for this for this sugar show, is this you know, this knee-jerk kind of reflex reaction that dentistry has to sugar, and you know, avoiding all sugar and don't eat sugar and all this stuff, when it's a bacterial infection that's causing the decay. So that's really the answer there. So we have a lot of resources available to us, and it's nice that it's a sugar company, so obviously it's going to be skewed a little bit more towards supporting natural sustaining kind of sugar, but it's really important to know what it is that we're talking about. And when the hype comes up, it's nice to be able to see both sides of everything. And having the sugar show here and websites MakingSenseOfSugar.com can really be helpful in making those kind of decisions. So this next article is from a different kind of an aspect. One of the things that Dr. Paldiak and I were talking about a couple of weeks ago with respect to the sugar show was the idea that different fibers, like fiber, can also be used as sweeteners and as sugars. And this secondary kind of a thread that I keep bringing up is this reductionist way that we're looking at everything. We're taking everything apart, finding the part that works the hardest, and then discarding everything else and not really getting a good understanding of how the parts work together. So an interesting kind of way of looking at that is the biofilm discussion, where one single germ in a colony is going to act differently than bacteria in a biofilm, and how those bacteria, yeast, virus, and everything work together to create an environment that's specific to them, and it works in a way that is chartable. So that needs to be applied to the way that foods are. When we talked to Dr. Aguilar about turmeric, for instance, and curcumin, and how they've extracted curcumin from the turmeric tuber, I don't know, is it a root, and found that the turmeric is the hard-working molecule, but there are 120 different components in turmeric, and so now the news is that you have to put pepper with curcumin in order for curcumin to work, and we're all sitting here going, well, why don't you just use the turmeric and call it a day? You don't have to mess around with all of these different pieces here. So I don't know. It's just hilarious to me. So we have this whole way of looking at things that it could be better, I guess. But this article here kind of captured my attention because it said, Orange Crush Carrot Waste Finding Fiber Future. So, as with the cranberry, once they squeeze out the carrot or extract the juice from the carrot, they're left with, you know, what's been known to be hog slop. So they would just throw it out to the hogs. Well, the naturalists and the nutrition-based eaters from the 1970s were all like, well, wait a minute, that's where most of the nutrients are. That's where most of the benefits are in what we're throwing out. Same with the cranberry. They were creating cranberry powder for ingestion in capsules, but they were throwing out the most magical part of the cranberry because it wasn't the juice. And so now these companies are drying out that mash part, and it's nuts. They're drying out the mash part, and they're capsulizing that and making a much higher density, much more quality level of supplement. So it's the same with sugar. When I was down in Belize a couple of years ago, we drove past a sugar plantation where one of our host's father worked. And there was a lot of hoo-ha there because they were, you know, those workers at these sugar farms work really hard, and it's dangerous work, as all farming is. And they were getting paid based on what sugar prices were. Well, these companies found a way to use the bagasse, the mash that is left over after the sugar was made. And as you can imagine, the sugar industry is kind of collapsing, and it's not in its heyday any longer because of these nutritional kind of bents that all these people are on. And these companies found a way to sell that mash, the bagasse, for a higher amount of money than what the sugar was bringing. So the workers were not paid based on that mash, although they were just as intricately attached to the mash as they were to the sugar. So, you know, it really just gets super dirty when you, it can get super dirty, let's say it that way. So that's why this article kind of piqued my attention, although I thought they were going to use carrots in soda. So see, I still have a little naivete going on. But what they're finding is that they can recycle the mash that's left over after carrot juice extraction. And it has a very high hygroscopic ability. So it attracts a lot of water. So when they put it into foods, they can make things that are moister because it does attract the water. And if you take it as a supplement, although the article didn't go that way, you would be having a hygroscopic diet, which we talked to about a few months ago, about a hygroscopic diet and how chia seeds were beneficial in creating an environment in the gut that attracts water and improves health that way. So look for this kind of pulp to be added to some of your foods. In this article, so far the lab notification for this product is called CaroPro 1-26. So there you go. That's how they're going to be reusing carrot and not throwing so much away. And guess who's going to complain now is the waste haulers, because there's not going to be as much waste to haul. So there's always somebody that's going to be miserable with every decision. The next piece of news really captured my attention also because of the microbiota of the gut and how this keeps coming up in the news. And my contention that the gut starts in the mouth is kind of lost on most people, but it is really important. This article did not go that far, but maybe they should have. So this article here was about microbiota and its influences on the impact of dietary strategies for blood sugar. And this was a report on a study that was done with a group of volunteers, subjects, 39, who ate either barley kernel bread for 3 days or, well, actually they all had the barley kernel bread, Who has barley kernel bread? I don't understand why they don't use something that people are actually going to eat. There's probably a really good reason. It's just not very obvious to me. So they ate the barley kernel bread, and their blood sugar was managed, detected or monitored, and so was their gut microbiota from the intestine side. So after 3 days on the barley kernel bread, they were all of the subjects were also eating white flour bread as a control. And the interesting piece here was that those who had a beneficial glucose response to the barley kernel bread had a dominance of a certain bacteria and more positive interactions between other microbial species in the gut. So by transferring the gut microbiota of these individuals to mice, they found that bacteria had no effect on glucose tolerance in mice on a high-fat, low-fiber diet. So the study suggests that dietary fibers are important, surprise, for that particular bacteria colonization and beneficial glucose metabolism. So that particular bacteria was called Prevotella copri, Prevotella copri. So P. copri. And that is the pull apart, the reductionist, the reductionist discussion in this study. I don't know what they're going to do with that, but it's interesting to note that people are studying it and they are asking or calling for a fiber rich diet, which is interesting after the carrot discussion that we just had. And maintaining a fiber rich diet may improve blood glucose management in people with diabetes. So they were calling out mostly type 2 diabetes, sorry. They were calling out type 2 diabetics. So that's important to know, that food choices like that, fiber-filled food choices, which require chewing, can improve the microbiota of the intestines, which in turn take care of the rest of the body. So it could be argued, I suppose, that this trend towards foods that don't need chewing, juicing that takes out the fiber, and all of that whole rant of mine have really made a difference in the microbiota and has detrimental effects. So yay for my side of the conversation. And tell your friends. Chew, chew, chew. Eat fiber, eat fiber. One of the conversations I had at that meeting yesterday, or actually I wasn't in the middle of it. It was part of the roundtable discussion that I was like, what? But the Weston Price Foundation goes along with the lines of Weston Price, the dentist who really discovered all of this dietary problems that we're having today, and not seeing a lot of benefit of the traditional Western diet, or the SAD diet, they're calling it also, standard American diet. And so we were talking about chewing and how important it was to chew, and then what are you going to chew? And of course, we talked about carrots, and sure enough, they make you chew a lot and stuff like that. And someone brought up that Dr. Price had recommended that vegetables be cooked in order to get the best nutrient amount out of those vegetables. So then where are we then with chewing? And of course, I pointed out, I don't think he meant to chew it to turn into mush. And then someone had said that Dr. Price had recommended chewing meat raw. And so, you know, that's where my line ended up. I'm not opposed to raw meat. I've eaten raw meat before, and it's not horrible. It's cold. But that's another, you know, another army heard from. I'd like to make this Weston Price Foundation a little bit more accessible to regular people that are farther away from that line. I think what happens a lot with these alternative groups is that they're so bizarre to the rank and file that it's hard for anybody to get their head around anything like that. So that's where that is. And then here is another article that I thought would be very interesting to you, and to let's see what our take is about that. So this article kind of wraps back around to the topic that we talked about, or that I mentioned a few minutes ago, and that is this reductionist idea and how we're pulling things apart to find out the most important piece of whatever it is that we're looking at. And so that is that's where this article lands. And it kind of caught my attention because earlier this week on my Facebook page, America's Dental Hygienist, I shared an article from another source that was illustrating that there's a difference between COCO, C-O-C-A-O, like where you make cocoa, hot cocoa, comparing it to cocoa, the natural ingredients, C-O-C-O-A, and it wasn't just a spelling mistake to switch out the A and the O. And so this article here is in Food Navigator, published on November 23rd, Unraveling the COCO Code. Barry Calabar discovers undetected polyphenols as it develops the COCO Atlas. And it turns out that there are over 20,000 molecules that the research team has already identified in COCO. And they estimate 3/4 are polyphenols previously unknown to science. So that is pretty interesting as they're pulling this apart. Polyphenols were known to be the most important candidates for beneficial health effects, as well as playing a major role in color and flavor formation during processing. The sheer volume of the polyphenol find means the playing field has now increased astronomically. So that is pretty interesting. So not only are they using the polyphenols for health benefits, but each of those polyphenols have their own profile, and that profile translates into different things with respect to taste, texture, and what happens in the microbiota of the gut. If you remember a few weeks ago, I did kind of a dump on the Berry conference that I was at, and it turns out that the polyphenols that we're ingesting and that they've identified in these berries and that they've been trying to emulate and manipulate don't do the work. Those polyphenols are broken down by the microbiota, and as we just discovered, you need to have the right combination of microbiota in order for that to happen. And then once those bits and parts are broken down, those broken down pieces are the pieces that do the work. So when you're reading about berries and solving cognitive dysfunctions and reducing inflammation and reducing pain, we have to marry that to the microbiota. And here we go again, finding out how to put things together. I posted a couple of days ago about this grouping of food that was shown to be more effective than the NSAID pain relievers. And I wondered aloud, and of course, the engagement is pretty low on Facebook, it seems, for stuff like that. And what it does, what those foods do are supposed to be practically miraculous, but people who eat those foods don't find the same kind of relief that they do when they're taking an NSAID. So how do those things work together? It may be that we have to give a poop sample when we go to the doctor's office in order to figure out what foods to have to get the greatest benefit from the food, and what bacterial profile we have down in there to make the best out of what we're having and what we're eating. So all of those things are pretty complex and pretty high-minded, but you can see that the closer you get to the paleo diet, the closer you get to a natural, uncooked or slightly cooked diet, the better off you're going to be, because that's what the bacteria are expecting. And once you start with the news of what's happening with saccharin and how it upsets the microbiota and makes you fatter. So you get more fat deposition, regardless of the calorie count of the diet in total, because the microbiota of the intestine is being altered. So let's kind of put this all together in our head and start really going backwards. And if you spend more money on the food, you'll find that you eat less of the food. You'll need less of the food. You don't have to have like, oh, I need this, I need that. Those are all big benefits. So that those are the kinds of things that I'm hoping to bring out in some of these episodes. And when you're talking about these kinds of things in respect to a dental hygiene practice, for instance, we really have an opportunity to make a difference to our patients. However, as I mentioned, some of this stuff is over some people's line. So even though you or your hygienist is on the line or on her line or his line, the patient may not be that far, and that hygienist has to be okay with that and help them move towards that. When we see very, very large patients and we make very difficult assessments or where we notice different things, it's hard to bring that up in the context of a dental hygiene appointment. I'm not sure that there is that I have the answer, which is why those kind of conversations are the kind of conversations I have in my mastermind group. So my next mastermind group isn't starting until the week of February 2nd, mostly because I'm going to be very tied up with Career Fusion and some other projects that I'm working on. So please contact me about being part of this mastermind group to help you develop a practice that will be more health-minded, be more communication-minded so that you can communicate to your patients and have a healthier patient base using the knowledge that we have available to us today, a tiny bit of fourth grade arithmetic in order to fish out some of the beneficial numbers, and move forward from there. Our patients are expecting excellent dental care. They're not expecting the last piece of stain to be removed from the very last tooth in the arch. And seems to me that that's a safer place to spend some time. So this is Shirley Kutkowski signing off for today's episode of Crosslink Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. Please feel free to share these episodes with your friends and family and discuss them at your next staff meeting for the benefit of all. Have a great rest of the day, everybody.